Greetings and salutations, everyone. I am AC2GS. My name is Roy, and I'm the control operator for this LIMARC technical net. Tonight, we're going to be having a very special tech net. Unfortunately, we lost one of our best hams, our best friend, Andy, WA2CDL, this last week. And so this technical net is dedicated to his life. I hope for this not to be an exercise in grieving his loss. We've all been doing that for the last few days in private, and we will continue to do that. But rather, we take this time out to celebrate his life, his achievements, his keen intellect, his kindness and generosity to us all and to others, and to celebrate a wonderful life. So with that in mind, let me drop for a second, and I will give you some pertinent links. Okay. We don't have the usual links tonight, but the link page is still up. There's a very nice picture of Andy doing what he loved so much. He was at his tune-up table at the NearFest just last week, doing what he loved to do, help people. So if you want to take a look at that, you type in roy.ac2gs.com. Also, at the end of this net, soon after, I will archive this audio file. So if you want to download it and send it to someone, you are free to do so. So again, that link will be roy.ac2gs.com. There is a chat room. If you like to hang out in chat rooms, sometimes they're active, sometimes they're quiet. It's available to everyone. Just type into your browser chat.ac2gs.com, and that'll bring you to the chat room. We offer an audio stream. I've put it up on the LIMARC mailing list. If anyone wants to listen to the live stream of this technical net tonight, just have them type into the browser technet.ac2gs.com. And, of course, sometime in the next week, Mike, KC2NJI, will have a copy of this particular technical net, and he'll keep it in his archive site, which is called amateurradio.tv. He has over a million visitors, so it will be available there. But it will also be available later tonight on my link page, roy.ac2gs, if you don't want to wait. So with that in mind, I'll drop it for a second. We're not going to take the usual list. We're going to try to kind of line up one after the other to talk about Andy and what he meant to us and what a great guy he was. It'll be a little bit random, a little bit chaotic, but I think it's the best way to set things up for tonight. And I hope to hear a lot of great stories because we all have great stories about Andy. Let me drop for a second, and we'll begin this. Okay. Who wants to be first up?
K2K Andy.
Yes, Richie.
Hi, thanks, Roy. You know, obviously we're all in shock, and we have a HamFest coming up. I've been running the LIMARC HamFest since, I think, 2006. And Andy loved the HamFest because he loved to have that tech table out there, loved to help people, just spend so much time and so much effort sometimes where something was a simple fix, but he was taking the radio apart. He wanted to make sure that everything was working well. So we're certainly going to miss him in that sense. I also want to say, I think it was 2006 that Andy had bypass surgery, and the doctors had told him that he would have to rest up for a while. And Andy, at that moment, stepped forward and said he'd like to be the technical chairman for LIMARC. Our previous technical chairman had been on for so many years, and he had a full-time job. And, you know, Andy said, you know what, it's time. One of the first things that Andy wanted to do was to connect the Selden repeater to the Glen Oaks repeater. Let me let it drop. I'm not sure if that idea had ever come up before, but Andy said it makes perfect sense. And it did, because prior to that, we had a Nassau County repeater, we had a Suffolk County repeater, but the Suffolk County people felt kind of disenfranchised. They really weren't in the mainstream. And Andy said, let's hook them up, and ultimately we'll go from Manhattan out to Montauk. And that was all Andy's idea. And today, because of that impetus that Andy gave us, we now have a voter in the Empire State Building, and we go out to a tower in Middle Island, and we're pretty much doing what Andy had hoped we would do, and that is certainly a tribute to him. The other thing, of course, is that Andy was tremendous in promoting transmitter hunting. He taught so many people how to do it, and I have to tell you, it was an experience riding with him when he was doing transmitter hunting. I think he had five hands going at the same time, at least it seemed that way. He was driving a car, pointing to the Doppler, two radios, and talking to me at the same time. What an experience. Anyway, Andy never had a bad word to say about anyone, always positive, and just a really good guy, and we're certainly going to miss him. This is K2KMB back to Nick.
Thank you very much, Richie. And you know, Andy was kind of always thinking of the next move. And because he was associated with the mass transit transmission signals and such, he was aware of some esoteric equipment. He was talking to me about setting up a GPS time synchronization between the repeaters so that at one point it might be possible to synchronize them on the same exact frequency, that they wouldn't have any latency errors and such. So he was always trying to improve. He was always talking to me about the voter system. And, he always had the repeater in his mind and thoughts and such. So thank you, Richie. Who would like to come next?
WA2SUH.
Yes, Larry.
Okay, Roy. Well, like everybody else, I was shocked to hear that Andy, you know, passed away on Thursday night. I had just talked to him on the phone that afternoon, and everything seemed fine. In fact, we were discussing helping out at the March of Dimes walk at Jones Beach next weekend. And I was going to see him today at the ham gathering at the Seaford train station. So it's really a tragic loss. I have a lot of memories of Andy, and I wrote them down, so bear with me. I'll take some pauses. We first met when we belonged to Nassau County Racing back in the early 70s. For years, there were transfer hunts on 10-meter AM every other week, and in the summer, we would have home QPH meetings very often in people's garages, which rotated among the members, and Andy was very active in these. He grew up in Merritt, and he hung out with some other young men.
Larry?
Andy knew them better than I did, and really enjoyed catching up. Is my signal okay?
No, unfortunately, it's rather noisy. It's gotten noisier progressively, and you dropped out of the repeater recently for about 5 seconds.
Okay, it was working okay before. Is this any better?
It's a little bit better. It's about, right now, 20-30% background noise.
Where was that when I needed it? You know what I could do? I could go to another radio. Maybe somebody else could go first.
Sure. I think that's a good idea, because I think you have a lot to tell us, and I'd love to hear it completely. Anyone want to go next, please?
KD2FYU.
Yes, George.
Of course, very shocked. And I'll say I know Andy 9 years. He was the first person I knew in the Limark, even before I became a Limark member. If you recall when we were young and city people remember this a little bit more, when you call for somebody after supper at night, and you go and you hang out on their on the steps in front of their house or by the mailbox on the corner. All of a sudden, one time about 8.5, 9 years ago, I'm starting to chat it up with him around 10:30, 11 o'clock at night. And sometimes he was on the road, sometimes he wasn't. I got very friendly with him. And that's what I could say about Andy. The one thing was is that if you liked Andy, you loved him. There's no question about it. A very generous way of talking and supporting you. And let me drop quickly, please. Four years ago, I asked him, let's check out a TS-830 Kenwood, a hybrid radio. And I brought it over to him, and I said, I got this radio, and I want to sell it. And he said, what do you want to sell it for? These are good radios. And we just got into it, and I was so interested after we unbuttoned the whole thing and were looking at it and testing it. He said to me, why don't you take an interest in these radios and repairing them? Because you really have a good view of what's going on. And I did. And I thanked him for that so many times when we talked about the hybrid radios that he instilled the interest, and I enjoy it so much. So thank you, my friend Andy. Back to you, Roy. KD2FIU.
AC2GS. Well, thank you very much, George. By the way, Chris K2STP is in the chat room. He tells me that the Selden link to the Glen Oaks repeater is down. He says the repeater is up, but there seems to be no link between it. So I don't know, Lou, if you're aware of that. I'm sure you are, but I just wanted to point it out to the rest of us out there. Lou, any information about the link between the two repeaters?
Yeah, hi, Roy. I'm looking at it now. On paper, it's connected. The computer's telling me they're connected, but, yeah, I don't hear anything coming out of Selden or Middle Island. So I don't know if it's because maybe we have an extraordinary load on the system. A lot of people coming from Echo Link, which might be limited to 10 because they only see 10. But let me see what I can do here. We're really unfortunate bad timing, but let's see if we can get this going. NY2H, back to that.
Roy, I'm back, WA2FUH.
Oh, okay, very good, Larry. So, unfortunately, the link between Glen Oaks and Selden seems to be down. I think we might have maxed out our EchoLink connections. I do not know if my IceCast connection has a limited number of connects, so if people are interested in just listening in and not transmitting, you can try my IceCast link. Again, you just type into your browser, technet.ac2gs.com, and hopefully there's some open slots there that people can listen into. So, Larry, continue on telling us about your experiences with Andy.
Okay. Does this sound a lot better?
A lot better.
Okay. I'm out in the car. All right. So, Andy, he had an early knack for fixing radios and building antennas and lawnmowers, too. He loved to repair them. He converted mobile and walkie-talkies, citizens band radios, to 10 meters, which he used on the hunt. And he even mounted a radio on his bicycle and with an 8-foot whip on the back managed to talk to many out-of-town stations. Later, when the 23-channel citizens band radios were being phased out, he converted sideband radios to 10 meters. This was about the peak of that sunspot cycle in 1979. He enjoyed converting them for other people, too. He worked plenty of DX with the low-powered radios. Take a pause. So we would keep in touch over the years as we worked in our careers, and we'd always see each other on the transmitter hunt. Eventually, the 10-meter hunt ended, and we found a group on 2 meters that were running hunts. This was the Plaza repeater group on the 146-640 Mineola repeater, which also hosted the Nassau County Refuse Net. And this group was very serious about their transmitter hunts. There was one held every other Monday night. And they had a point system, and it was very competitive. We were always out there trying to get 5 points for coming in first. If you came in second, you got three, and if you came in last, you got one. Eventually, participation dropped off, and we found another group called Litharc, which has continued until today. We'd have a hunt and then head to a diner where we talked about what went wrong. And Andy and I tried to keep the activity going over the years by making presentations at radio clubs and Ham Radio University for many years. He was very good about getting people to come out and especially enjoyed running the hunts at the Limark picnics each year. Richie was talking about the enthusiasm that he had for the hunts. And did you know that Andy really enjoyed bowling? He participated in leagues for many years, I think with Jeff and 2IOM, but not lately. We both enjoyed watching the pro bowlers tour on TV. I have a DVR, so I would record the matches. He didn't have a DVR and watch them live, but I kept telling him, don't tell me who won. He was so anxious to tell me. At least 20 years ago, Andy acquired a 55-foot crank-up tower from George WA2PAV up in Sands Point. A bunch of us went up there to remove it and load it onto a trailer, which Andy rented. I remember it was Memorial Day weekend and probably the hottest day of that year. We put the tower on the side of his driveway, where it remained for probably 15 years. Many of you may have seen it. Eventually, he poured a foundation and the tower went up. But it was only last year that he assembled a large beam, and that was the first antenna on the tower after 20 years. He finally got everything working well, and unfortunately, he won't be able to enjoy it. He had plans to put up many more antennas. And he would have been on the low bands more, but he enjoyed talking to people on various repeaters. Everyone knew Andy. He was friendly to everyone and so willing to give technical advice. We would talk almost every day, and he would share what was going on in his life. I'd hear about the good times and some not-so-great dates arranged through dating services. He was an open book, and I pretty much knew everything about what was going on in his life. He was such a caring person, and it was hard for him to say no to someone who needed help, even though he had many other things he should have been doing. We learned that if you wanted him to work on a radio, you had to pin him down and get him to check it out when you came over. Someone came up with the phrase, Andy's House of Radio Detention. The radios check in, but they never check out. And how many of us still have radios sitting in his house? I have a few. For many years, Andy would provide a service, he called it, a tune-up clinic at the Limark Campfest. And Richie mentioned this, where he would check out people's radios and they could have them tested before buying them. In recent years, he would go to Nearfest, Shelby, Nutmeg, and Sussex Hamfest at his own expense to provide the same service. Sometimes he didn't even have time to walk around to see the tables. He really enjoyed helping people. Sometimes people would insist that he take their radios home with him to fix, even though he had no time. And how long they sat, who knows. Anyway, Andy was a mensch, as they say. Jerry Abrams asked me a couple of times at Ham events, so, where's your other half, meaning Andy? I'm really sorry I won't be seeing my other half anymore, but we will all have great memories of a very special guy. And I got plenty more stories. Back to WA2SUH.
AC2GS. Thank you very much, Larry. I'm sure we're going to have time to hear a lot more stories from you. A lot of us have bits and pieces of things sitting around, and Andy loved to give tours. He gave virtual tours to some people. I was fortunate to get an in-person tour of his facilities, and they were astounding and amazing. And as you have a few radios sitting around there, I have a rotator and rotator controller, and you know, we should have a kind of secondary club of people who have things in Andy's house. He was still working on a Gap Titan that he was planning to put up on his garage roof. He was finishing up with it, and you know, what can I tell you? We also had fun at Ham Radio University. Richie K2KNB talked Andy into doing another presentation on calibration equipment, and I was chatting with him over the phone, as I often did, and he said, "Do you want to help me with that?" And I said, "Well, I don't really know that much about calibration equipment, but yeah, sure," because it was always a pleasure to help Andy. Andy helped everyone. He helped me. So we did Ham Radio University for a few years, and it was loads of fun, and I hope he enjoyed it. He didn't really like when it went virtual, unfortunately, so that kind of put the end to that. But it was a pleasure working with him, and it was a pleasure talking to him. And the excitement that he had when he would talk about how he had discovered why something wasn't working was like listening to someone recite a mystery novel. I tried to get him to do it on the technical net, but for one reason or another, he didn't feel as though it was appropriate. But it was a marvel to listen to how he thought these things through and out, and kind of got a good sense for it even before he pulled the lid off of the chassis. So he was such a great guy, and we're all going to miss him. Thank you, Larry. Does anyone want to go next?
AATUTF.
Yes, UTF.
.168.1.3. Okay, good evening. Do you hear me okay, Leroy?
Yes, Gary.
Okay, well, I got to know Andy when I rejoined Limelight after returning to amateur radio about 2 years ago. And here was the fellow who really did the hobby actively and well, and I saw that right away. And sometimes Andy and I would have a long kind of memory lane type QSOs about the old days on the Limelight repeater, like the original morning show, and remembering all the hams that have come and gone through time. And Andy was actually an invaluable repository of ham radio history. And he would also like to recall places, times, and events from all over, like Brooklyn, Queens, Long Island. And our last QSO together was about restaurants from around the boroughs, which ones might still be there, like Roland Roaster in Brooklyn, and which ones were gone, like Ben's in Rego Park. And Andy, he sure got around in his day. He was a very likable and easy guy to chat with, and in short, he was a very human, very accessible, and just a great regular guy. And I sure don't have to tell all of you how formidable his technical knowledge and abilities were, but Andy had an open and inquiring mind, generally. A great curiosity about things, great and small, technical and otherwise. And so, you know, his personal reach was wide. And so many hams from all over knew him and appreciated him. And the impact that he had and the high regard in which he was held is shown by the shock, the remorse, and the great sense of loss that we all felt at his passing. So, 7-3 Andy, old man, and Dr. Nett.
Okay, thank you very much, Gary. By the way, the IceCast stream is up to 19 people, so hopefully we won't hit a limit. I think we hit the limit with EchoLink. I usually sit on EchoLink for a bunch of reasons, but I left it to leave room for the 10 slots that are available. Andy was a historian for Limelight. I mean, you have to understand that. I think he joined the club almost when he was a kid. He certainly was one of the younger club members when he first joined. And so he's met a lot of historic club members who have come and gone, either retired or become silent keys. And every so often we would go down memory lane together because I had no knowledge of most of what had gone on with Limarck. So he was a great historian as well. You know, I say that amateur radio operators in the old days, they had kind of two routes for entry. One was shortwave listeners, which was me. The other was CB operators, which was Andy. But even before I think he was a CB operator, he told me stories of how he put together intercom systems in his childhood house when he was growing up. So he was always tinkering with all of this stuff. It was one of his skills, and he took to it like no one else that I know. I could not recall anyone else who just kind of felt how electronic circuitry worked and how super heterodyne, super regenerative radios function. It was a marvel to watch his mind engage with trying to figure out why something wasn't quite working. Anyway, anyone else want to come go next?
AD2 DK.
Yes, DK.
I don't know how I'm making the trip. I'm out in Middle Island, so I'm trying to hit the Glen Oaks repeater. I never met Andy, but I did speak to him online quite a few times and found that he had a similar love for old boat anchor receivers. And we just kept talking and said, well, one of these days we gotta meet up. And for one reason or another, it never happened. And, you know, I'm saddened that it didn't. Anyway, 82DK, back to next.
Okay, very good, John. Thank you. Andy, I told people he had thousands of vacuum tubes. He had more than a few vacuum tube testers. He was very adept at dealing with old radio equipment. You know, like most people, when he was growing up, that's what was mostly available. The solid-state hybrids came into being and then full solid-state, and he kept up with it all. But, yeah, he had a lot of old-time equipment. So thank you very much, John. Anyone want to go next?
WS2N.
Yes, Paul.
Okay, yeah, met Andy many years ago. One of the people that went over to his house, he wanted to help me fix something, and he says, you know, well, why are you here? You know, have you ever been on ATV? I said, no. So, sure enough, he says, yeah, let's go upstairs. So, top floor, he had this, it all set up. And it just so happened it was a guy from Massapequa that was also on. So sure enough, I got myself on ATV, and that was unforgettable experience doing that. But one of the things, of course, that Ant would always do is he would get on the TechNet for decades, I guess. You know, and he would always contribute. He had a lot of answers, but, you know, so even though he wasn't fixing somebody's radio in person, he was doing it on the air many, 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 many times. And then I keep records of the different nets that we do. And he started one June of 2020. And he called it Andy's Corner. I don't know if you came up with that name or not, but anyway, every now and then Andy would come on and give a speech on electronics and, you know, some in-depth topic, which was very interesting. Let me drop it. And Andy's Corner, he would come on, you know, once a month or so, whatever it was, and we got the 35 of them. Unfortunately, we won't see a 36. But, that's, you know, great guy. It's going to be a terrific loss, I think, for all of us. Back to you, Roy. WS1.
AC2GS. Thank you, Paul. We came up with Andy's Corner. And, you know, there wasn't a phone call conversation where at some point or another he was telling me that he was mulling over another episode and thinking about it. And, you know, when Nearfest was over and done with and he had some job responsibilities, he was going to present another one. Unfortunately, we'll never get another Zandy's Corner, but it was always a pleasure. And like I said, I always loved to hear him on the technical net. He had so very much to give us all, and he will be missed. He had these two interesting sub-hobbies in this, and you mentioned ATV. He was fascinated by analog television. Unfortunately, there are not that many people fascinated with ATV, and ATV, because of the bandwidth requirements, is a very short-range hobby. You can't find someone in Florida and do it with them. So he found, I think, two people. One was an older gentleman. He's still around in the area. I think he's in his mid-90s, but he's kind of retired mostly from operating his radio gear, much of it that he built himself. And Andy used to love to take it out during things like Field Day and demonstrate ATV. And one of the things that he was sad about was that he couldn't kind of do it anymore because there wasn't any other active ATV person in the area to do those demonstrations. And he was always looking for people to engage in having a fox hunt. He had no, you know, he loved going on those fox hunts, and he would go on more if he could possibly talk people into it. Anyway, does anyone want to go next? Yes, Wesley.
I don't know if you recall Andy's stories. He wasn't talking a lot, but he was quite many times mentioning his job in New York Subway on the leaky feeder. The cable run along the tunnels, which emit and receive radio waves, functioning as an extended antenna. Interaction.
Yeah, he was very proud of his work. He did a lot of different things. He set up a lot of the subway communication system, and he was working on upgrading and updating them through a third-party contractor. He was also planning to do some work for another organization in the area. You know, Andy didn't believe in retirement. He had one part-time job, and he was more than happy to take on a second part-time job.
Oh, so you say he was only taking the job after he got retired?
Well, I think he had a full-time job at one point, and eventually he decided to retire from it. But because of his expertise, third parties kind of said, would you like to do this kind of 3-day-a-week sort of thing? And he said, yeah, sure. I mean, it was a hell of a 3-day-a-week sort of thing. There were times he was associated with the Bell Lab facility. So every so often he'd have to haul himself to New Jersey, Bell Labs, in order to test out equipment and configure things and request replacement parts. And then he'd go into the subway systems and tell people how to set things up. And about a year or so ago, I think he came on the technical net that he had found some ground loop problem and figured out exactly where it came from, and even brought a subway technician maven to add to the conversation. So he was very proud of his work, and he should have been. You know, he was a meticulous craftsman. He took a great deal of pride in his abilities, and he did the best job that he possibly could. I never, ever, ever heard Andy cut any corners.
Yeah, that's why probably Andy opened up Andy's Corner, which he didn't want to cut any part of knowledge to be given to others. I miss the guy. I recall correctly, he was also servicing the cameras in Subway.
I don't recall. He didn't really talk to me a lot about cameras. He did communication, so it's possible that the data stream from cameras were part of the communications infrastructure. What he talked to me mostly about was just the communication systems.
Okay, so that was the first part. Year 2010, if I recall. I didn't have much of the equipment at that time. After September 11, when I lost my office in World Trade Center, I was kind of trying to not get involved in anything at all when I saw people dropping down. And Andy spoke to me and he said, call me. So I called him and, how about if you come over? And I was talking at that time to KC2WGP, John, about my machining shop. I had lathes, mills, CNCs whatsoever at that time. And he said, I have a lathe. So I said, show it to me. So I went there and he showed me a basement full of the equipment, hundreds of pieces. And I said, why are you 50 pieces of equipment of the same sort? And he said, because it was given to me. I had a chance to take it, why should I leave it? And I saw that passion. I saw that dedication. I saw that amazing need for knowledge. I was taken by that. Back to you.
Well, thank you very much, Wesley. Yeah, I mean, among many other things, Andy always aspired to understanding things better. He had discovered at his job site an incredibly dense electrical engineering textbook, which he was so amazed at it that I actually bought a used copy of it, and thumbing through it gave me a bit of a nosebleed. And he had discovered all these esoterica, and one of the things that he put on his got-to-do list was to learn differential calculus, which I told him is a rather big thing to do, but nevertheless, he was really fascinated with that book, and he wanted to understand it better, and he wanted to learn how to understand it better. So he wanted to understand differential calculus. He also at another time told me he really wanted to learn computer programming because he felt that he had never really explored that avenue either. So this is a man that's always looking to learn more. He never settled on the expertise that he had so well, but he wanted to expand it even greater. So, I mean, that to me is the epitome of Andy. You know, he never settled for what he had and what he was. He always aspired to something even better than that, and he was pretty great by himself. So that's another thing to say about Andy. Anyone want to go next?
Yeah, good morning.
Oh, okay, sure, Wesley.
So he showed me his lathe. The lathe was something like Southwestern that was a company making lathes for Second World War, but that one was somewhere from early 50s. It was a little bit rusty, but still good working, and I asked him, are you using it? He said, yes, of course I do. What do you need that for? I don't know. It was given to me. So and then he showed me the drills, some other equipment that he has, mechanical one. And I've noticed that the guy has so many interests, not only in electronics, not only in radio, but also in mechanics and plenty of other areas. So then I went to his place when he had an oscilloscope. I was black and white, in perfect condition. He said, well, I've got it not working. I made it working. And then I saw a few radios, and I said, when are you going to finish them? And he said, never. I said, how come? Because once I finish somebody's radio, somebody else is giving me another radio. And then we were laughing. Back to you.
Yeah, that was life in his house. He had a never-ending stream of people bringing him broken things, and some clever people, like Larry mentioned, if you kind of stood over him and said, what do you think, and kind of pushed yourself to the front of the queue, then chances are he would figure it out and fix it, and you'd get it back in a little while. Unfortunately, if you just kind of left it there and said, when you get a chance, that could take years. So, yeah, and he was, you know, that was another thing. He didn't need the money. You know, I mean, he had the tune-up table, and he gave out cards that he was available for technical repairs. But, you know, I mean, he didn't make a living doing that. He didn't have as much turnover, I think, and he didn't have time to have that turnover. So, again, it was kind of as a service for the most part. He charged, but you know, the idea of making a living off of that, I don't think really was on his mind, although more than a few times he suggested that I drop this medicine thing and take up repair of amateur radio equipment, which I was confused about at the time that he made that suggestion to me. Maybe he knew something more about socialized medicine than I did. Anyway, anyone else who want to go next? Yeah, there's a lot of noise artifact. Give it another try.
Penta World D?
Yes.
All right. Same here with Carl and to World D. I met Candy about 30 years ago through another friend who's no longer in the New York area, but that was it. Now, I loved Andy's tune-up table. As a matter of fact, I brought his old equipment down to Florida this year so he can do it at Hamptasia. He's and I have stuff in Andy's house of detention right now, just like a lot of other people. Also, you talked earlier about he was originally in the thing with the trying to link the two repeaters together, the 8.5 machine and the one out east. Originally, he wanted to do it with 900 meg radios. We chose Maxtrax because I had the software to convert and he had the chip. So we made a whole bunch of chips and we converted a whole bunch of radios, but pagers were still involved at that time, so we had a lot of noise and they never got the filters for the radios. But he was a great guy. He really understood ham radio and understood helping everybody, and he knew that if you helped, he helped somebody, somebody else would help him. And I think that's what this whole family is all about. Back to that.
Yes, indeed. Thank you, Carl. You know, I used to joke with Andy that I was going to get him a T-shirt that says, no good deed goes unpunished, because he was so generous with his time that he didn't have time for himself sometimes. And occasionally he would come to the conclusion that maybe he shouldn't have offered his help so many times, but in the end he would still offer his help. He couldn't help himself. He was just that type of a generous, kind person. I talked to him for hours upon hours, and I don't recall a single time he said a mean-spirited thing about anyone. Just a lovely human being. You know, as was said before and will no doubt be said again, he was what we call a mensch.
Absolutely. On one other thing, his retirement was from the NYPD radio lab. He worked in the radio repair and reprogramming department for the NYPD. It's a funny thing. One of the gentlemen that just left here to move to Florida worked with him.
was in a PD, and another guy that I worked with at the Long Island Railroad was a retired NYPD and worked with Andy. So it's a really small world that, you know, you meet people all over the country that know him, and that's a great thing. I'm sorry he's not going to be able to go back down to Orlando because they loved him last year, just 2-3 months ago when he was down there. I brought his equipment down for him to Hamtation, and they were very excited about having him there, and he was a big, big hit. Back then, that's it for me.
Okay, very good, Carl. Also, I think he worked for the Path Authority because I was with him at Sussex a few years in New Jersey, and he kept bumping into people that he worked with at the Path Authority.
Yes, he did work for Path.
Oh, you mean Port Authority?
He worked for Path right after he left the PD, and then he did the Transit Authority and some other stuff. I could never keep up with how many things he was doing.
Yeah. Well, that's what, if you want something done, it didn't always work with Andy, but if you want something done, give it to a busy person.
Exactly. All right, that's it for me. It's just a sad thing that he's gone. I mean, I treasure his friendship a lot. And like I said, I have stuff in Andy's house of detention. I think it's going on 4 years now, but whatever.
Yeah, we should all form a new club. So, Craig, you are quite right. It was the Port Authority. I got that pronounced wrong. Craig, would you like to say something tonight?
For as long as I'm mobile, sure. One thing that I could probably remember, even though it really wasn't much of a big help, was during our Hamfest when I was painting, Andy lent me some support with trying to fix one of my bow fangs that technically was working on simplex, but it wasn't putting out any power, and that's why I could not reach a single repeater, and so it was only really good for simplex work. And he told me the bow fangs are so cheap plastic that it's not even worth fixing. You basically would be spending way more money than what it's worth. That's why they're like $20 to $30 each. I mean, my Radio Diddy that I actually just got from Dunn, because I accidentally left it at Rimley yesterday. Please make this light. Thank you. It's similar to the bow thing, but it's actually a little bit more money, and it's actually somewhat more of a better radio. I'm actually going to take that down to Florida, but yeah, Andy was really good at trying to fix stuff. He looked at my radio and tested its power, and it wouldn't put out anything. So I ended up honestly just reneging to chuck it in the garbage.
Well, I mean, that's the point of Baofengs. We all have one. I think we should get it in Cracker Jack boxes. I have one. You had one. They're not the greatest, but they are cheap. They're disposable. If they don't work, you throw it away. You don't really cry too much. You know, if I had to throw my IC AD92, I think, or 92 AD, that cost me about $300-$400. But I would shed a little tear. But with Baofeng, you know, they're radios on a chip, so there's really not that much you can really fix. And also, they're kind of burnt-in ROMs, so you can't really modify much. I mean, if you do a Google search, you'll see that people have kind of taken them apart and taken pictures, but no one's really hacked them because there's just not enough material to hack anything with them. You just use them and throw them away when they don't work anymore.
I still have the broken run in one of my drawers, so I'm probably just going to throw it away. There's no reason into keeping it anymore since it's pretty much junk. Even if I wanted to get rid of it for parts or not working, I would sell it for $1. I'd be surprised if anybody would actually take it for $1. Just saying. Andy also even offered to help me out with trying to figure out an antenna on the side of my house, but again, and my parents are still in the way of that. And Andy even told me how big he was into HF, and he did tell me at one point before this happened that he actually wanted to get HF in his car, and he looked into it, but unfortunately he never got to it, so unfortunately he's not able to do that anymore.
Yeah, I could see him on HF, but he was so happy with the repeater. You could turn the repeater on any time of the day, and you had a good 50-50 chance of hearing Andy's distinct voice on the repeater. He loved talking to people. You know, he would talk driving to a store, driving home from the store. You know, people used to make jokes about him. He was always traveling back and forth from sundry stores to pick up things and to bring them home. So he did, you know, I mean, he set up, as Larry mentioned, he just set up his tower very recently, and he had slopers and all beams and all kinds of fun stuff. And he enjoyed the 75-meter AM net. He had a bunch of friends who were very clever people who designed circuits, and he would meet them up at Nearfest. They'd get together for a dinner and to tell stories back and forth. So he loved HF, especially 75, especially AM. He dragged this humongous AM transmitter up into his attic, which I don't know, you know, what people are going to do of how to get it out of the attic at this point, but I guess if he dragged it up there, it could be dragged down. And it was his pride and joy.
It really upsets me that we're going to have to try to find a new home for all of his stuff or throw it all away. I mean, it's pointless to throw it all away if it still works, but we're going to have to find new owners for all of his stuff as well. If he just put up his tower, considering it didn't really last very long, now that he is up there in the heavens, we're going to have to find ourselves a new home for it.
Yes, indeed. And, you know, I mean, it's not coincidence that only, I think, about 2 weeks ago, he traveled to the residence of a person he worked with who was a ham who had passed away. And he gave himself the job of helping out this guy's relatives who needed to de-ham his house before they could sell it. He had antennas. He had all kinds of equipment stuck in odd places. Him and John and I think Tony rode down there to New Jersey, and you know, I'm sure it was a lot of work, but he did it again because he's a nice guy and because he wanted to help his friend who had passed away. So now it's time for other people to do that service for him and for his loved ones, to figure out a good home for a lot of it. Unfortunately, the nature of our equipment is a certain percentage where you're just not going to find a new home, and it's going to end up being sold for scrap metal. And it's sad, but it just is the way it is. But there's a lot of excellent equipment that he had that people would be interested in, and finding a new home would be something that Andy would appreciate.
I'm sure we could find a number of people, considering he had quite a bit of stuff in his house. We'll just have to play it by the ear. I mean, I would be happy maybe to take a couple of things. I still have that ICOM 718 that I actually recently got used off of somebody upstate, even though I haven't yet to hook it up to an antenna, preferably the one in my car that I could just unhook and temporarily put it on the tripod like we talked about before. And that's really it for me. As I am pulling down my block, I'll probably listen in on this a little more once I get inside and switch on the HD. So I do appreciate you taking a listen to my side of my ties with Andy, even though I didn't really know him too much or met up with him frequently to, you know, chat on a personal level. So with that being said, thank you for my comments for Andy. AC2GF Net Control, KD2OGB Mobile.
Thank you, Craig. Always a pleasure. Who would like to go next now?
WB2AHK.
Okay, you doubled, but I heard AHK a little bit better.
All righty. Hello, everybody on the net. I, as everybody else on the repeater, was just shocked to have this happen. Andy was a great guy. I know him probably like 30 years. And I just wanted to relay one interesting story that you mentioned, that attic situation there where he was at a transmitter, a military heavy transmitter, probably weighed 500 pounds. He wanted to get it up in his attic. Let me let it drop. And one day I got a call from him. I'm not too far away from him, a couple miles where he lived. And he said, Chet, can you come over here and help me lift the transmitter up? So I couldn't say no because he did plenty of things for me. And I got to his house, and there was a contractor there who I later on got to be friendly with. His name was Jim. And he said, I got to get this transmitter up from my garage up into my attic. So I looked at this thing. It was a military transmitter, Model T-368. And it was heavy. The power supply alone was probably like 180, 200 pounds. Anyway, he said, I want to get it up in my attic. And this contractor made a hole in a closet on the second floor. And this closet was small, maybe 2 feet by 3 feet. And the contractor had somehow or other got up in the attic and put a floor down. Let me let it drop. And he made a hole, and above that he erected a wooden frame, and he had a chain hoist. And the job was to get in the closet. The contractor would be up in the attic, and he dropped a hook down, and my job was to hook the chain, wrap it to the pieces of the transmitter, it'll be hauled up to the attic. So in the little closet, standing in this little closet, there wasn't a room for me. It was just room for the transmitter. And it took about an hour or so at least to haul the military transmitter, 3T68, up from the closet up into the attic. That's the only way it was possible to get that transmitter up into the attic. And his plan was to get on, I think, 75 meters and operate AM. So there is this military transmitter up in the attic, and it'll have to come down to the closet and be, hoisted down. Oh, boy. Anyway, back to you, Roy. Go ahead.
Okay, Chet, that's a great story. I heard bits of it when he was considering doing it. So he got it up there. He got it operational, I believe, although I think he also had other AM equipment, because he would mention how he had to fix the other AM equipment, that it would kind of go bad every so often, and he'd have to take it apart, and there were wafer switches that he had to replace and all kinds of things. But, he enjoyed his 75-meter AM net, and he certainly told me stories of some of the guys that he talked to. And told me to go to their QRZ page, and amazing stuff. These guys were engineering state-of-the-art, the digitally designed AM transmitters. Talk about a strange bedfellows. I don't think of digital technology when I think of AM transmitters, but these guys had apparently perfected very high efficiency devices based on, Class D, Class E amplification circuits and such. It's a fascinating story, but, I feel terribly bad for, he survived by, I think, three sisters. One lives in the area, and I assume that her and her husband will kind of be running the show of liquidating things with the assistance of the Limar Club. Well, thank you for that story, Chet. It fits in nicely with the rest of the jigsaw puzzle. That's another thing. Andy loved jigsaw puzzles. Every so often, he would buy himself one of these enormous, 500, 1,000 pieces, and he would spend the rest of the month slowly putting together these jigsaw puzzles with the idea that he was going to mount them on the wall. I never heard that he had mounted them on the wall, but that was his idea, so jigsaw puzzles. Anyway, there was someone who doubled with Chet